to speak about somebody, a gadol, whose yard site is going to be in this month. And the one I want to speak about is the Rosh, whose yard site is Tes Cheshvin. And the Rosh occupies an extraordinary role in Klal Yisrael's history. For those of you again who are new, I'd like to try to serve where my Mekoros are, because anytime something comes without Mekoros about an event that happened hundreds of years ago, you can basically write it off as being worthless. So the most reliable monograph about the Rosh was written by somebody named Reb Chaim Freiman, put out Moshe Rav Kook, and basically he gets all of his information from what's written in the Tshuvas HaRosh himself. That's quite a source of a lot of information. What others, contemporaries, wrote about him, the Tashbetz writes, his one, that one, and basically almost everything that he does, like any good work of history, is sourced to a contemporary of the Rosh, or some immediately afterwards, and basically that's where the information comes from. In the Tshuvas itself, there are here and there pieces that are very interesting. So talk about the Rosh, because the Rosh really stands at a crossroads in Klal Yisrael's history. First of all, you have to bear in mind that in those days, countries were not exactly the way we have them today. The countries were not as big as today. They were bits and pieces. They were closer to the size of a province. So there were two centers in Europe of Yiddishkeit. There was France and Germany. Jews had been thrown out of England, France and Germany. France had most of Bala Taisvis, Rashi Bala Taisvis, and then life became kind of difficult, and Germany also had had some Bala Taisvis, we'll see in a second, and then it came to a close. And there was Jewry in the Iberian Peninsula, Spain, Portugal. Those were two centers. Now, the Jews in... So the Rosh was born in, not clear, 1240, 1250, and died in about 1320, 1327. Again, the dates are conflicted. But by and large, that's when he lived. He came at the tail end of the Taisvis, of the Tkufa de Bala Taisvis. 1100s and 1200s, beginning of 1200s, what Tkufa de Bala Taisvis, and basically the Rosh, in many ways, was the last, or the one after the last Bala Taisvis. The Rosh's Rebbe was somebody who was possibly the Gadol HaDor, and the last Bala Taisvis, who was also stood on a statue of his own. His name was the Maharam Mirotenberg. The Maharam Mirotenberg lived in the German city, Rotenberg. He was the one that everybody sent shilas to in Europe. He was the recognized poisik of French-German Jewry and wider. We have a lot of... We're missing a huge amount of his shilas of Jewish. We have a lot. They're not written terribly well. They're just like very short and brief. And that's why most of what we have from Maharam Mirotenberg is written in other Sfarim, like the Rosh will bring it, so on. He was the Rosh's Rebbe in Germany, and the Rosh and the Maharam Mirotenberg was the Gadol HaDor. The Maharam Mirotenberg, there was a lot of Gzeiris in Germany. And again, when we're talking about Germany, we don't mean, it's a lot of the states that are Germany today were like little independent states, and they had different affiliations and back and forth and so on. They had a minhag that they would allow Jewish communities to grow, and then they would make a gzeira, throw them out, take all their money, and a while later bring them back in again and out, in and out. It was quite terrible times. And the Maharam Mirotenberg had decided that he would go to Eretz Yisrael. He was at the border and about to leave, and they arrested him. I think it says somewhere that somebody mastered on him. I don't remember, but they arrested him. The king was very scared that if he would go to Eretz Yisrael, he wanted to go to Eretz Yisrael. Other German Jews go to Eretz Yisrael, and the sponge would try, there'd be nobody to squeeze for money anymore. So he had him arrested, he had him imprisoned, and didn't release him. This happened in 1286. The king made they made a committee to go to the king to ransom him, and the Rush took personal responsibility to raise $1 million, I think it was, incredible sum, that he would be responsible, personally liable for that money. And they began to collect the money, and the Maharam Rothberg refused. He said it's a halachim of reshes, that you not pay the person for more than his worth, because we don't want this to become the Minhag Medina. And the Maharam Rothberg refused to allow himself to be nifter, and he was nifter 7 years later. In 1293, he was nifter. And the king kept his body in jail for another 14 years until somebody would pay for his body. The Rush, meanwhile, realized that he would be next in line. And the Rush managed to slip out. And he escaped. Him with his family. And they began traveling westward to escape Germany. They came to Savoy. And he was afraid to stay there because it was too close to Germany. There was it was under that prince's dominion, and he began and he traveled through Provence, which is South France, and then ended up in Spain, which also was a lot of small countries, kind of, and under the banner of Spain. There was Aragon, Castile, Delusia. There were a lot of I don't know what to call them, entities. The Rush. We have to understand something. Today, to go from France or Germany to Spain is a train ride. In those days, it was traveling like halfway around the world. It was different cultures. Spanish Jewry's culture was remarkably different than German Jewry's culture. That's going to be a very important piece. And the Rush began seeing a whole different world in front of him. In Provence, he began to see the differences were German and French Jews were they were very insulated. They had little shaykhis with the goyim, except when the goyim put a gun to their heads or a pike to their heads and demanded money. That was the only contact they had. Nothing but gezeiros and redifas. They were not terribly cultured countries, and the Jews were the only things they learned were Torah, Yiddishkeit, you know, Gemara, Halacha. If they learned, that's what they learned. They had no shaykhus with philosophy. It wasn't part of theirs. They were very medaktik in mitzvahs. Diktuk HaMitzvahs was very, very important to them, and that was their world. As you moved westward towards Spain, so once you crossed into Provence and came into Spain, so people lived well with the goyim. They, you know, there were gzeiros and redifas, but there was a lot of interaction with the goyim. When times were good, they mixed. They saw themselves very much part of the Spanish culture. They were into philosophy, into all sorts of philosophy, and much less learning for most people, and much weaker adherence to mitzvahs and so on. That was a clear difference between, you know, going from here to there. The Rush kept moving westward. He ended up in Toledo. In Toledo was where he ended up in Toledo, but before that, he came to the Rashba's town, and he spent a week learning Chavrusa with the Rashba. And they had tremendous mutual their hearts for each other. They held each other in great esteem, and the Rosh, together with the Rashba, would become the Gdol HaDor in Spain. The Rosh would begin countersigning the Rashba's declarations, b'chulu b'chulu. The Rosh ended up in Toledo, I think it's 1305, and he was there until he was nifta, basically. That was the Rosh's trajectory. The Rosh was of a very different cut than a Spanish Jew. They had tremendous derechayetz for him. They had tremendous, they respect him tremendously. But he came from a different world and was appalled at what he saw. That he opened a yeshiva that focused on learning and so on and so forth. He left over a tremendous amount of Sfarim. Let's go through the Sfarim. And one, the most important of his Sfarim are the Piskei Rosh. They're in back of Masechta. Everybody almost always learns them. They are similar to the Rif. He condenses the Gemara so that we have just a halacha. He adds the points that Tosfos made, and Bederech Klal will agree with it, or will, if he disagrees, he'll say so. But Tosfos's points, la halacha, are almost invariably incorporated into the Rosh. That's the Piskei Rosh are the Shulchan Aruch used the Rosh as one of the three pillars that he relied on. The Rif, the Rambam, the Rosh, and the Rosh was one of the three. The Rosh will add, sometimes I'll say what the Rif says and argues, what the Gaonim say, once in a while Rabbeinu Yonah and so on, but that's the Rosh's Piskei Rosh, and it's the most important of his works. The Rosh also wrote Tosfos on Shas. It's not clear if the Tosfos that we have from the Rosh are his own Tosfos. In other words, this is how he learned the Sugya, and this is the Shiurim he said in Yeshiva. Or he basically took the Rosh Mishans and transcribed it, adding here and there a little bit. Not clear exactly how that came about. He wrote a Pirush on Mishnayos that we have on Zroim and Tyrus. He wrote a Pirush on some Mesechtis, like the Nedarim. Also not clear if you're on all of Shas, we only have this, only wrote on those Mesechtis. He wrote Tshuvas. And the Tshuvas are also organized in a very interesting way. There's like hundreds of Tshuvas. They're called Klolim. The Klal is a section that has a bunch of Tshuvas around a central topic. That's how his Tshuvas works. Quite an unusual way to do it, but that's his Shas Tshuvas. They are very important. He put out a Musa Sefer called Arches Chaim LeRosh. It also is called Sefer Tzavos, Sefer Tzavah. I think it has another name also. It goes by a few names, but Tachlis, it's like 132 sayings of what to be Mechazik Zalfin. It's not Musa in the sense where he explains anything. He just says a person always does this and that. And people have written Pirushim on it, where he's coming from, what it entails, and so on. There's also a Pirush on Chumash that's ascribed to the Rosh. Very hard to know if it's the Rosh or not. It's lumped together with the Tosfos' Pirush. We don't know exactly how it came about and what it is. Those are the Sfarim that he put out and we have. We also was Zeicha to somebody forging a Tshuvas HaRosh. In the mid-1800s, a closet maskil put out a Shailas HaTshuvas called Psamim Rosh. Supposedly these were Tshuvas that were found from the Rosh, new Tshuvas. In those Tshuvas are included Tshuvas that paint the Rosh as a closet maskil and as a makil in some halachas that are extraordinary. Certainly those Tshuvas are forged. No one has any doubt about it. The question is if all the Tshuvas are forged, and or no, he took some genuine Tshuvas that he found and mixed in whatever he wanted. No one, again, the jury's out on that. But so we have forged Tshuvas in Rosh also. Besides what he wrote, we have what people wrote in his name. But that vast array of material is is the Rosh's, what Rosh produced. Actually, the king of Germany wanted him to come back. And he sent a message to him that he's giving him safe passage back, and there'll be 50 people to protect him, and he won't touch him, and this and this and that. The Rosh had some doubts about the sincerity of that message, and he didn't take him up on the offer. Basically told him thanks, but no thanks. But, and he stayed in Spain, and that's where he lived out his life. In Spain, there was a raging machloikis. So in the Tshuvas, you know, there are a few interesting things about the Rosh. I want to explain what's history and what's interpretation. When you read history, so the facts are the Rosh signed off on certain haramim and so on and so forth. In the non-Frum historians basically portray the following. Spain was Gan Eden. Beautiful country, golden era of Judaism. Jews were both very Jewish, very Spanish, cultured, musical, philosophical, you name it, everything was wonderful. Some Kanoim came in from Germany, the Rosh B'Seicham and the Rosh B'Reisham, and destroyed this beautiful Spanish Jewry. So the facts are as follows. And then there's a reality, and the Rosh himself writes about that reality. There was an ongoing war amongst the Rabbanim about how we deal with philosophy. And the Rambam, who's written some works of philosophy, in other words, Mor Nevuchim plus Sefer Torah and things like that, and there was Kanoim, Abba Mori, Rabbeinu Yonah, and so on. And they kept on, they were more and more upset. And it came out with a cherem against anyone teaching their children under 25 philosophy. There was a group of Rabbanim against them. They put out a kuntres called Adara. So this is all actually printed. All these letters are printed in a sefer called Minchas Kanos. It's the letters of Abba Mori to other Rabbanim to agree with him and to present his case and so on. We have the sefer, and this is where, obviously, we can call this information. There was a sefer that came out against it called Adarabba, that these Rabbanim are to be put into Cherem for impugning the Rambam, etc., etc. And there was a group of Rabbanim that were happy the way things were, but they were a minority, and they didn't, the Rashba was with Amari and so on and so forth. The Rashba and the Rosh were more moderate in the sense that they didn't want to make a full machloikis. They were scared of the implications of a full machloikis. They tried to reach some understanding until they felt kolo kol akitzin. Basically, the Rosh writes that he wasn't so against things until he came to Spain. He went to the province, came to Spain. At first he thought this is very fine, and then he realized the people, their Yiddishkeit is seriously compromised. What happened was, what philosophy, quote unquote, had done was as follows. They began to see the Torah as a mushel. And Avram and Sarah are connected, really, they're really Chomer, that's Surah, and this is Elon, this is all, and all of Torah is just a myth. And really talking about very deep philosophical ideas, which basically weakened any sense of commitment to it. People are meratzim, people didn't learn, they didn't know much halacha, and their minds were not Torah true minds. They Torah was like a nice book to be studied for its worth. That's where people were. And the Rosh was appalled. And he said, I have this Tzayin Chayim because I think people should never learn philosophy. And he keeps writing about it, he keeps knocking it. It's not, it's portrayed that Spanish Jewry was ideal Jewry. So if ideal Jewry are people that don't keep mitzvahs, don't believe in Torah and Shemayim, and are very well versed in Spanish culture and philosophy, then they're right. It was the golden era of Jewry. But if keeping Torah and being dovok in Torah and maminim bnei maminim, then it was appalling. So they came out with a cheirim against it, and the Rush signed off on it together with the Rashba. The Rashba was the godland. The Rush added his weight, which was tremendous, because as a bal halacha and as a posek, he was the respected authority, and that carried the day. In his tshuvas, and tshuvas are actually extremely interesting bedarach kal, because they give you a real portrait of life and so on. So there's a lot of interesting things in the tshuvas, but two or three interesting points in his tshuvas about himself. A, he mentions that the Spanish government allowed them to administer capital punishment. And he said there was one shaila about a meiser, and the Rush writes that if three times he did it and was warned and there's witnesses and so forth, they should kill him. He said the din that we don't do capital punishment today is only mitiras dalad mrs. Besen, you know, for speaking Michal Shabbos and so forth. But since there's such a tremendous need, we need to do it. There was a woman who was a Zayna, and she was warned and so on and so forth, and the Rush said to disfigure her, so that she's not natural people. And there's a very strong tshuvas. There's another tshuva, which again touches on this fault line of the tkufis, Germany and Spain, actually, I should say. There was a takana in the cities about how to divide up certain yerushas of a husband who passes away, how much his wife would get, the kids, and they were written in Arabic. The Rush did not know Arabic, and somebody took issue with the way he interpreted it. And this person wrote that to understand this, we need to understand Arabic, and also you need to have a broader view of life. He said there's something called natural law, things that make sense, that should be, and then religious law is mafkia from that. And it's hard to get a feel from the back and forth. There was a back and forth there. But basically, the person was trying to say sometimes common sense has to take precedence of halacha. I think that's the feel of it. The Rush really slams him hard, really hard on it. And this is one place he writes, Baruch Hashem, I don't know philosophy. And this is absolute rubbish. Halacha is halacha. And you have to pass a din like a din. And all this other nonsense, very, very strong lashon. And really, really harsh. In another place, the person apologized. He was a rav, he was a chashuv person, and he apologized to the Rush. But come on, the Rush is extremely harsh on that. Another very fascinating tshuva is there was a rav in a town who did not want to make an eruv in the town. He felt that there was a eruv in the town for decades and decades, and maybe even more. And he had a halachic issue where he felt it's a big kula. And the Rush writes to him that what he's doing is terrible, because by being machmer and not making eruv, he's being machshel many people in Tiltel, and therefore he's geyser on him that he has to make an eruv in his town. And then when he heard that he's not following through, he basically wrote, I don't know to whom, that they should, he said he's crazy, this person, and they should put him to cheirim, and they should, you know, take him out of the public arena. Felt very, very strongly about this person, that it's wrong for a rav to push a chumrah, which will end up being machshel so many other people. He felt that was wrong. And his tshuvas every so often is very, very strong about minhagim. He holds that only the Gemara is binding, and takanas hagaonim are not binding. If you find rias against the gaonim, you passing against the gaonim. Very strong about that, and so on. That was a point. He said the list, you know, to take even other rishonim right that kol divrei gaonim divrei kabbalah ninhu, they held the takanas of the goyim with tremendous esteem. B'chlal, what the goyim said, he argued on that, and he said goyim are subject to the same halacha, so to speak, as are the rishonim. It makes no difference, and if you have raya against them, it doesn't stand anymore. He left over a few children. We know of Rabbi Yehuda, who I think took over his place. The most famous of his sons is Rabbi Yaakov Bal HaTurim. Rabbi Yaakov Bal HaTurim was a giant in his own right. The Tur is the answer of the Paiskim to the Rambam, where the Rambam wrote one Shita, one Deya on Kol HaTorah Kula. The Tur was the first halacha sefer that goes on topics, as opposed to the Rif and the Rush, who are on the Masechta. And it goes on topics, and he brings the major machlokas rishonim that are negea, the major machlokas rishonim. So it's a work that, on the one hand, it's organized like the Rambam, but it's a completely different type of work, because the Rambam made a point of having only his shita, so that gives it a very unified feeling from A to Z. The Tur brings all the machlokes rishonim, many of the machlokes rishonim, the important ones, and the Beis Yosef supplemented it later with inyanim from later. So the Rush, let's just understand what the Rush did. A, the Rush took Tyrus, Germany, France/Germany, and brought it to Spain. And from that point onwards, Germany would be way second rank to Spain. It would be, that was it. He sort of fused the two Torahs together. He brought to a close the era of Baalei Tosfos in a very fine way. Baalei Tosfos was the last big one. He's the last one. The Tosfos HaRosh does serve for us to help us elucidate Tosfos for that reason. He brought halacha and respect for halacha to Spain. He brought a reality check to Spanish acculturation, and that they had, you know, sort of lost themselves and become totally disintegrated into philosophy and Spanish culture. He gave it a jolt and was very, very strong. And he writes that the reason why he's so strongly against it is not because he intrinsically opposes it, it's because he saw the Churban. He comparing what Germany was and what Spain is, he realized what the Churban is, and we must contain it at all costs. His psakim are really the foundation for, in a certain sense, Ashkenazi psak. The Tur would then become the sefer that coming from that. Even though he had moved to Spain, he was still China, so on and so forth. A final note of interest. There's a sefer called Emek HaBocha, which is about the Tzaros of Klal Yisrael in France, or Germany, or Spain, and written by a contemporary, Rabbi Yosef HaKohen. And he writes that a year before 1492, no, it was 1491, the wife of some Rav, I forgot the name who he says, had a dream. Her husband came to the dream and told her to destroy the Beis Olam, the Matzeva. I think he told her to destroy his Matzeva. And she went and destroyed all the Matzevahs, including the Rosh, Rabbi Yoina, and others, in order that they don't fall. Historically, we now understand that a year later, the Goyim might have desecrated it. So instead, they removed it, and it's totally gone. So it says the way it says the Sefer was about a year before the expulsion, they plowed it all into the ground, all the graves and so on and so forth. So we don't have a Zecher anymore, a physical cave for the Rosh or Rabbi Yehuda. On the other hand, like the Gemara says, you don't make matzevas for big people. Their words are matzeva. The Rosh has left us so much that's the living. The Piske Rosh, the Tosfos HaRosh, the Orchas Chaim Rabbeinu Rosh, the Tshuvos. There's in back of the Masechtas, we have something called Piske Tosfos, which is an abridged, it's sort of the bottom lines of Tosfos and Psak, it's some people say the Rosh wrote it. It could make sense because that was basically what he was trying to do, bring the halacha out. The Maral Prague was very against Tosfos on the side of the Gemara. He held it sort of leads people into endless pilpul. He proposed putting the Rosh on the side of the Gemara. He says, if you're looking for a sefer to sum up the Gemara, there's nothing better than the Rosh. The Hashkocha and the has not kept with that, and we have Tosfos inside. But the Rosh was the sefer of the Baal Tosfos, the transition of Torah from Germany to Spain, and in many ways he propped up Spanish Jewry. They would be around for another almost 200 years, thanks to him and like him, that they brought the starkheit of that German Jewry, Baal Tosfos, to Spain, which was disintegrating. And like I said, his Yahrzeit is Tes Cheshvan, and this marked an extraordinary period of transition in Kaisel's history.